You are now listening to the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
Where we stop at nothing to bring you the right facts on health, fitness, and psychology. Featuring some of the world's most experienced professionals. So you can learn, lift, and live. With your hosts, Meg, Dr. D, and Mehdi.
I did my bachelor in Sweden. So I did sports science, and then I got into more like functional training and strength and conditioning and all that stuff. So I became a little bit more aware of how to do things and, you know, like posture and using your core properly, using your body properly, instead of being like this machine-based training that I got into when I first started. From my personal opinion, at least, I never want anybody to train through pain. If you have a limited amount like that you can train or limited equipment, really find the weak spots. And even if it's mobility, if your mobility sucks, spend a lot of time now where you sit inside and work on your mobility, because that's going to help you once you start getting back into training.
All this and more in today's episode.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of The Project, and I'm sitting down, well, not sitting down because this is, you know, this is all online right now, but I get the chance to talk to Marlene Anderson, also known as the Buff Pastry, games athlete, awesome coach. So if you don't know her, I highly recommend checking out her Instagram. And Marlene, welcome on the show. It's so awesome to have you. The first time that I actually saw you was in a comp with at the Flair comp. It was a teams category, and you guys absolutely killed the workouts. And then we had met at Inspire during the trials for Battle of the East, the Battle of the East swim, and you gave me a couple of tips, and it served me well. I finished third in the swim because of those coaching tips that you gave me in like a 5-minute conversation. So welcome to the show, and please, you know, introduce a little bit more about yourself, like how many times you've gone to the games and what years.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I'm very honored to be the first curfew interview you're doing.
That is very true. That is very true.
It's always a first for something, I swear to God. So yeah, no, like I'm very happy that short conversation we had helped you to improve a little bit. It was a fun chat we had there by the poolside when we were trying out these workouts.
Improve? I was pretty close to beating Igor. Like, I came in third place in that swim, all because I flipped on my back for, you know, I'd say 25 meters. It caught my breath, got back into it.
Hey, that was really good. No, you played that so well. It was really, really good. Yeah, so a bit more about myself. Is anything specific or like specific place you want me to start?
How'd you get into CrossFit? I think that's the best way of how do you get into fitness, CrossFit, coaching, and, you know, where it all started.
If I'm going to start like from the very beginning, so personally, I haven't been a competitive athlete like before I got into CrossFit, like whatsoever. I did the normal stuff when I, like from 16, I went to the gym a little bit. I did, you know, aerobics classes. I did water aerobics. I ran on the treadmill now and then, did spinning classes, just like normal gym goer stuff.
Really? That's a surprise because most of the high level CrossFit athletes like yourself, you know, Miko, he started with like cross country running and stuff and playing hockey. You know, that's how he was into sports. And a lot of other guys that I talked to were deep into sports and then flip the switch into CrossFit. So it's interesting that, you know, you didn't really have an athletic background beforehand.
No, I'm like the weirdo athlete. I have no competitive background. I didn't do any like serious sports on a high competitive level or anything like that. I just did normal stuff like anybody else. I did some running. I trained for like half marathons, but, you know, like I didn't do amazing times. I got under 2 hours, that was like good, you know, so it's still like just like anybody else. Then I did my bachelor in Sweden. So I did sports science. So then I got into more like functional training and strength and conditioning and all that stuff. So I became a little bit more aware of how to do things and, you know, like posture and using your core properly, using your body properly, instead of being like this machine-based training that I got into when I first started. And then I moved to London. I got introduced to rehab and I worked at a rehab clinic there for almost 7 years. It was a really, really good experience, to be honest. We had very difficult clients, you know, the people that come with a really thick file. They've been to a lot of different places and they have disc bulges, they have hip pains, shoulder pains, like whatever you can imagine. I had one woman, she had such severe osteoporosis, I had to train her while she was laying in bed. So it was interesting times.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's really tough to deal with, especially from that perspective. Now, having that background in sports science and functional movement, posture and everything, how did you get into CrossFit? Because I think CrossFit is like the opposite of doing everything right in the gym, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like you're going to work under, it's for time and it's like rushed compared to like normal gym training. Through my like work with rehab, I was in contact with an osteopath and he had got into CrossFit. So we did a workout together once. So we went to just a normal gym and he said, let's do a CrossFit style workout. So I think the first I ever did, we did like 400 meter run on a treadmill with like 15 dumbbell thrusters and like 20 air squats or something. We did like 3 rounds for time, something like that.
Wow.
That was like the first thing. And then I kept up with him and he just like, oh, like you're actually really good at this. So he said, I started training at this gym. It's in London. It's called CrossFit Central London. It's still there. That's where my journey began with those guys. So he took me to CrossFit Central London and then I got into training there and that was it.
Wow. So then this was what? This must have been 2009, 10, 11, 12. I mean, when was your first appearance at regionals?
Yeah, let me think. Like, I tried to remember when I just started training. I think maybe I started training around end of 2010, maybe something like that. And then because I did my very, very first team competition at the end of 2011. And it was actually in, try to remember the name of the gym now. I can't remember. It's because I remember it was a team competition. It was three guys and one girl per team. And we competed. Sam Briggs was there. So that was the first time I got to compete against her.
Oh, wow.
So that was an experience because she was amazing. Like from when back when, like anytime I've seen her, like since then, she's been amazing.
Yeah, she's a machine. I don't know how she does it. And it's very interesting when I saw her in the Dubai Championship this year. I was like, wow, she's just, for being around my age, I don't even know how, she's 37, right? 38?
Yeah, 38, I think she even, no.
To be at that level at 38 is amazing. Like that's truly, it makes me, because I started CrossFit a year ago. So it actually gives me like, it's like, okay, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I didn't start too
late. No, like she is like so amazing. Like the amount of pain she can absorb just beyond my comprehension. It's amazing to watch her.
So now let's go back to that. You competed in teams. And then when did you make regionals for the first time?
So regionals was actually 2012. Because I remember it was actually my first open. So no, I hadn't been doing CrossFit very long. It was my first open, I remember, because I went through the workouts, you know, like most people do. I did it for fun.
Yep.
I went through them and then I qualified. I think I qualified like, you know, the bottom five for regionals. And I was as shocked as everybody else probably that I actually qualified that year.
That's amazing. I mean, qualifying that fast in a sport is pretty amazing. I mean, how'd you do it? Was it just, were you actually trying or were you just doing it for fun? And, you know, the competitiveness was just with the people that were in your gym.
Like you did it for fun, but still I tried to get the best possible score.
Yeah.
Like still, because also the owner, his name was still is like Brian Sharp. He was judging me. So I guess he noticed after, you know, like the first one, because he kept track a little bit. So, you know, like do this much. And, you know, like he pushed because he saw that I could probably do pretty well. And yeah, he got me to regionals.
Wow, that's amazing. So your first year in regionals, did you make it to the games that year or was that, how did you finish that year out?
So that year, it's 2012, there was, I actually had to withdraw on that year because it was a year we had sprints. I think it was sprints and heavy dumbbell snatches was one of the workouts. It was like a rowing, it was a row, pistol squats, a power clean workout. It was like a lot of different ones. There was one with sprinting and 70 pound dumbbell snatches, which was really heavy for me back then. It's still a bit heavy, but I can do it now compared to then.
Wow.
As I remember, I had to like split jerk it, or you're going to call it. I had to snatch it and land into lunge. for me to be even be able to do that weight. And I can do it on my right arm, and then my left arm was, you know, it was a gamble.
Oh, wow. Wow, that must have been tough.
Yeah, it was really tough for that. So I remember I was trying on my left, and I was trying, and then I caught one snatch really awkwardly, and that was my rotator cuff gone for that after that workout. So that was it for that regionals.
Oh, that must have been brutal.
Yeah, like in one, like, yeah, you were really disappointed, you know, you have so much adrenaline when you add a competition. And especially when it's the first competition I've done like that, it's like my first competitive competition, like in my life, and you have so much adrenaline. So going out like that, it's more disappointing than if you don't make it when you go through the whole sequence. At least you feel like you've given it your all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Now, when you tore your rotator cuff, I mean, granted, it must have been detrimental. It must have sucked completely walking off the floor. But how did you feel like 3-4 hours later? Was it, I'm going to get myself stronger and come back stronger next year? Or was it, what kind of mental toughness did you have at that point?
I think I was still pretty new. So for me, it was still like, how did I even get here? And it was, you just felt it was this amazing experience, and it would be really cool to be able to get back to it. So yeah, you just wanted to get back into the gym and make sure like rehab back to like full recovery and start working on like the weaknesses that you like, I need to get stronger. I need to be able to do these weights. And looking at the other girls, what they were doing and what they were able to do, you know, so like, oh, okay, that's where I want to be and what I need to, where I need to get to.
So did you rehab back or did you go with surgery? How was that process?
No, thankfully I only needed like rehab. It took about like 2-3 months. Like in the beginning, I couldn't even hang from a bar.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't get my arm over 90 degrees. But then like slowly, I started doing like eccentrics, and then you just started getting back on track. And I had to work a lot of my mobility because it was really bad back then.
That must have been brutal, but you know, at least you didn't have to go under the knife. I think that's a plus.
Yeah, anytime you need to go on the operation table, it's a huge like impact like on the body, even though you don't feel the pain, but the body feels it. I don't know how to describe it. You know, like you have, it's just a lot more to get back from.
So you get back, you rehabbed yourself back, and then going back into the season, you know, as CrossFitters will call it, which I don't think there is a season because I do CrossFit all year. You know, like there's no off season. Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah, it's my off season. I'm like, dude, you have an off season? I don't even know what an off season is. I've been doing this for almost 2 years and I just keep going. I got blocks. That's about it. But so going into that, now you rehabbed yourself, you get yourself stronger. When did you make another appearance back in the regionals? Or when did you try out? When did you do the qualifiers again?
So I actually started back again then 2013. So the following year, so I did one open workout in London, and then that was the year I moved to Kuwait. So I did my first open workout in London, and then I moved and I did the rest in Kuwait. And I qualified again to regionals that year.
Oh, it's amazing. That was in 2013, right?
That was 2013.
And in that, because I got a message from Haya Sharhan yesterday. She sends her regards. And she has a question for you, but I'll ask that the question later on. And she was like, she was cheering me on. She has a very fond memory of you cheering her on in regionals in 2013. So that's pretty cool that you were there with Haya and, you know, you both had qualified.
Yeah, actually, I remember her from back then. It was the first time we met. Yeah, it's pretty amazing that like how you bump into people like even from when back when. I remember specifically that because I went to the regionals we went to was the one in Seoul in South Korea.
It must have been good having someone from Kuwait there too. Like I know how I felt when I've gone to competitions and like I found someone from my town or someone from Kuwait or whatever, because you can automatically affiliate with them a little bit. So how was that? Was it a little bit more comforting, you know, knowing that, okay, I just moved to Kuwait and here is the first female Kuwaiti girl also competing, Kuwaiti female lady also competing in regionals?
Yeah, of course. It's nice to see because especially since the sport then was very new in that region. So it's like, it's always fun when like I don't know, like, you know how they say like the lesser regions, I don't know how to like express it, you know, like, so it's nice to see that it had grown enough to see the local women making it to a competition, especially a competition like regionals.
How was the vibe back then compared to now? If you could talk about that a little bit, because you've been in CrossFit for a while and I'm sure you've seen it grow over the years and take different turns. How is the vibe of CrossFit back then compared to now?
I feel especially when we went to Seoul and like the two times I went to Korea when the regionals was there, it felt like it was a bit more, I don't know, like a bit more cozy.
Okay.
That makes
sense. That does.
Like things were a little bit smaller. Like the sport was still not, you know, like now it's more professional. It's professional athletes. They have sponsors. They have, you know, it's like serious stuff these days. So back then it was still growing and it's still, especially back in Korea, it's still not as big. So it just felt more like everybody is like a family and you felt closer to everybody. Like now it feels like it's just bigger.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And speaking of the regionals, when did you go to the games?
So I went to the games in 2014. Because it became a little bit of a mess up because since I moved from London to Kuwait in 2013, I did my first, I messed up there a little bit because I did my first open work in London and then I did the rest in Kuwait. So I went to Korea, but since I, according to the rules, wherever you do the first workout, it's that regionals you need to enter. So I should have been in the European regionals.
Oh, okay. All right. That's interesting. Yeah.
So the scores I got in Seoul didn't count when I got there. So that was a little bit of a bummer. But you know, like you live and learn. I only have myself to blame. And then I returned again to Seoul in 2014. And then I got to the games.
And
I remember it was a very close competition. It was nail biter.
Those are always the best. And especially if you walk away going to the games, that couldn't have been, that must have been awesome. You must have been on top of the world. Now, back then it was top five from the region. Qualified, correct? Or was that...
No, actually, because it was, again, like a smaller regionals, according to like CrossFit. So it was only the number one that could go.
Oh, wow. So you came out number one in the region back then?
Yes. I was first in Asia that year. So that was the only reason I went. Yeah, they only allowed one. And then I think it was in Europe and the US regionals when they allowed five, I think, three or five. I can't remember.
That is absolutely amazing. So you do CrossFit for 3 years. You win the regionals in Seoul in 2014. You find out you're going to the CrossFit Games. How did you feel at that time? What was the feeling when they said, okay, you're the winner? You know, they announced you as the winner. Was it like, this is awesome. I get to go to, was it in Madison back then?
Yeah, it was back in Madison.
What was that like when you were like, oh shit, I get to go to Madison? Like, how did that feel?
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. It feels like you can't believe it. Like you're training and training for this thing and all of a sudden you're there. It was just an amazing, amazing feeling. Like I can't even like describe how incredibly like thankful and happy and it's like all these emotions like in one go, like just just like explode in you. It's so, so amazing. I can't describe it.
That's awesome. So now when you finish that, how did that, how did your training change after finding out you're going to Madison and you have a chance at, being the fittest woman in the world? How did the training mentality change? How did your programming change? Did you have a coach then or were you doing things on a website? Like how was that back then?
I had and still have. I have my coach is called Rob Silver. He's in Miami. So we have been working together actually for quite, even before I went to the games, because he did some programming that I started. And then when I made the first regionals, he just like, oh shit, we need to get you on. Because he did like a general program, like you join any of, like many other coaches do. Now it's a general program and you join and you pay or like that kind of thing. But then when I was that good, so he just like, we better get you on a, like individualized program because you need to, otherwise it's going to take way longer for you to get as good as you need to be. So it became a lot more individualized. And then, as soon as I qualified for the games, the training became way harder. It was a lot more volume. Like he wanted me to get used to not just like the conditioning volume, like the running and like more long distance rowing and that kind of thing, but also the muscle endurance part of it that you can do. Like a lot of muscle ups in a row, a lot of squats in a row, a lot of wall balls in a row. So you get that burnout feeling as well.
How did that go? I mean, it was the tactics then compared to now. Like, was it, an EMOM of like 3 or 4 or 5 muscle ups to kind of train, train that endurance factor or, train your body to get used to that volume? Or what was it back then compared to now?
I try to remember. I think back then he used to use a lot of EMOMs, like just like you said, you do maybe 7 muscle ups, and then you do some overhead squats, and then you do like a third movement, and then you go back. So it's like shoulder heavy, but it's still not all gymnastics and these kind of things. So yeah, definitely a lot of EMOMs.
So not much has changed really in CrossFit since then, I'm assuming.
No, I feel like it's like, you know, like there is a way to train, and then depending on where you're at in your, like on your journey, like for CrossFit, then obviously things will change. Like if you're in the beginning or if you're more towards the higher end of your CrossFit career.
So now you go through the training part, you go to Madison. How is that feeling? And what were the feelings, you know, when you stepped onto, you know, the start line for the first time? Because I'm sure you remember that vividly. You know, that's something I don't think many people would forget.
Yeah, no, like back then, because especially like you see all these people that, you know, even like back in 2012, I saw Annie Thoris Dottir, for example. And like you just step up and you see all these people that you've just seen like on Instagram or on social media in some way, and you know, like, oh, like I'm gonna compete against these guys, like I'm on the same arena, like, and just them and nobody else. It's a pretty crazy feeling. Like it's almost like I felt like I, you know, like, should I be here? It's like, did I do a mistake? So no, it's really amazing just to be able to measure yourself up to like the best athletes in the world. It's like a one in a lifetime experience to get that. Like you can get, like now it's a little bit more when you have like the invitationals, you get more of the pro athletes doing more different competitions. But back then it was regionals that you maybe bumped into them. And then it was when you got to the games, when you saw them.
That's amazing. That's pretty cool. That's really cool to the story to hear, to be honest with you. Now, 2014 finishes. Where does your career go after there? Did you go back to the games after that, or was it regionals? How did that work afterwards?
Afterwards, I went to regionals again in 2015. It was back in Madrid. I didn't get to the games that year. And then 2016, I qualified for regionals. I was going, and then I got injured maybe, I think that's a week before the actual regionals, so I didn't participate in it. And then that was the last year of regionals. Then we didn't have regionals anymore.
Oh, wow. Because when did they start doing the country thing? That was what, 2019, right? Or 18?
I think 2017 was when they started. No, they didn't do the country, but they did through the open only, I think, or something like that. I think it changed. I think it was 2017.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't know. I'm still pretty new to the sport, so I have no clue. You know?
Oh, you know, like I've been in it for a long time, but I'm also a little bit clueless, to be honest. Maybe it's just bad memory. I blame old age.
Well, you're not old. I think we're roughly around the same age. So, I mean, you're still kicking, you know, people half your age's butt in wads, you know, like you did at Flair. I mean, at Flair, you guys, you came in first place, correct?
Yeah, we did. But also, like, when you have an awesome partner, also, it definitely helps.
Well, BOE this year, you didn't have a partner. BOE, it was every woman for themselves. And I think you did one of the greatest things I've seen in sport. And, you know, I've watched all of sports all, you know, my entire life. And you synchronized your last rep in the finals, correct?
Yes, we did. We synchronized our, I think it was almost like last round. We tried to semi-synchronize everything so we would finish at the same time.
I mean, that honestly is, you can tell someone's a champion when they do something like that. You know, like that was, because I was in the stands and I was watching it, and I was like, I looked at my wife and I go, what is she doing? And then like after I think Armand had talked about it on the mic, I was like, okay, that makes sense. You know, and I just thought it was one of the greatest things that I had witnessed. You guys were on that side and I had just seen Miko demolish the workout on the other side. So, you know, he finished in plenty of time and you guys, it was a great thing to see. Walk me through that moment. Did you guys think of that beforehand, or was it in the mid workout where you're like, hey, let's sync up, or how did that work out?
It was a pretty interesting thing to do. I think we confused a whole bunch of people when we did that whole sequence. Everybody from organizers to fans to spectators to commentators to everybody. It was both me and Carrie, because me and Carrie, we have competed together several times over the years. at regionals, like at these, like Battle of the East. We've competed plenty of years together. So during Battle of the East, because we were neck and neck, like it was like, I want to work out, she want to work out, and we kept overlapping. Before the last workout, we were warming up and then we were talking, and because Kerry was moving back to Australia, so it will probably be the last competition after all these years that we're probably going to do together. So we just discussed and said to each other, you know what? We've been working our asses off the whole weekend. We're both giving it our absolute best. We've given our everything. So to finish, like, we both deserve to win. So, and we wanted to end it as like a friendship, like friendship celebration, like of all the years we competed together, and to finish on a really like nice high note of that. So we discussed it beforehand that we will go through the workout. We like keep looking at each other so no one goes too much ahead of the other person. And then we make sure we turn towards each other on the last clean and jerks or thrusters. No, clean and jerks was. And so we synchronize them. And then that none of us passed the finish line. Because if either of us crossed the finish line, they had to stop the stopwatch. So if none of us crossed the finish line, we will get the same points and we both should like come on podium. So we had to do some math before we actually did this whole thing.
Oh, that's amazing. That is pretty cool, though. That is an awesome thing. It was awesome to see, and it must have been awesome for you guys to kind of seal off that friendship, you know, with her moving away. That's really commendable, to be honest with you. You know, I tip my cap to you guys. And to see it in this day and age where the competitiveness that, I mean, everyone talked about Battle of the East being fun. I saw it was fun for us masters, the masters guys. Like, I was joking around and having a blast. But when I looked at, like, the younger guys, it was like, it was ice. Like, it was hardcore. Has that mentality always been around, or has it just gotten more and more competitive over the years?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I don't, it probably has become more like that. Like you say, also for the younger ones, because it's more professional now. You can actually make money from it. There is more competition you can travel to. There's harsher competition. Because I felt the same, like, even in our master's category, like, we joke around, and we take the workout very serious when we start, but in between, it's very lighthearted.
Yeah, that's understandable. But I mean, when I look at it, and from my perspective, watching pro sports my entire life, baseball, football, basketball, soccer, everything, you know, I've always looked at it, they're the 1% of the 1% that succeed and get in there. Now in CrossFit, it's a little bit different, because in CrossFit, it's only really a handful of athletes that get those million-dollar deals and the sponsorships and everything. When you look at, you know, Furkowski and Matt Frazier and all of them, you know, even Josh Bridges. And even with Josh Bridges, I'm sure his sponsorships doesn't come anywhere near Matt Frazier. So it's like the sport's still growing. To me, looking at it from, because I'm new to this, I can see it from an outside perspective too, that it's also growing but slowing down at the same time as a sport and as a training modality too. Because 2010, 12, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I think it was at its peak where everyone wanted to do CrossFit. You had the community feel of it, the old joke of drinking beers after the workout and stuff. And now it's, you know, I go to boxes and it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's usually a competitive feeling, and it's been very few boxes that I've gone to, and it's been welcoming. Has that always been like that, or is it just something that's recent?
No, I think it's a pretty recent thing, because when I, for example, from back in London, even when I first came to Kuwait, Kuwait is very good still with being very welcoming. I feel at least for me, if I look from my perspective as a coach and athlete, when I go to different boxes in Kuwait, like, people are always very friendly and very welcoming, and it's very, very chill. But I think maybe people are starting taking it too seriously, because at the end of the day, for me, CrossFit became something amazing because of it was famous for its community. Like, when you came in, you can be anybody, you know, like man, woman, doesn't matter if like age, like which age, young or old, you know, like, and nothing mattered, you know, you're always welcome. You come in and do your best. We have fun together. You know, it was that kind of feeling was what you should sense in any box when you came in. It's like you say, no, like, probably a lot of more, they want to aim for like a lot more people, they're on programs and, you know, a proper following with a coach or something. They want to compete. They have ambitions of competing instead of going into, you know, I just want to be fit, or I just want to do this particular thing for my fitness because I feel like it's fun.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. No, that makes total sense. And I mean, I don't know if you heard this episode, but we had an episode a while back, and part of it was why Kuwaiti CrossFit sucks. And I think because there is this divide in between the gyms right now, and it sucks because I think if the best athletes in Kuwait actually train together sometimes, you know, they'll be better. You know what I mean? Because you get better by training with people that are better than you or people that compete with you on a daily basis, if that makes any sense. I mean, what's your perspective on that?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think, yeah, you definitely, to become better, that's what the top athletes are doing. You see them train together all the time, because if you have someone who is close to your ability, you push in a much different way than if you go next to your buddy that you know you'll beat. It's fun to train with your friends, but sometimes you need to challenge your ego a little bit and train with someone that you know might even be a little bit better. And he might actually beat you, or she might actually beat you today, because it gets a whole different training experience.
What about training alone? Because you have a home gym. I mean, you've posted on your Instagram, you have like your home set up there. And I personally do a lot of training on my own. And sometimes it really sucks, where after like 3 weeks of it, I have to go to a class just to get some human interaction while I'm working out. So how's the mentality with that? Because I find it's a lot harder to train on your own to get that final push towards the end. And it's so much easier to quit when you're by yourself. But, you know, if you push through that, you're that much better when you go against someone better than you. So how's that from your perspective and your knowledge?
So, yeah, like you said, I'm like in your camp that I do a lot of training by myself. It's just been in London. I did a lot more because my schedule just correlated better with the people that were like good athletes at the gym. In Kuwait, it was a little bit more tricky because you just get busy and the coaches were in different gyms and we have different schedules and that kind of thing. So it is definitely way harder to train on your own, especially if it's, for me, if I do strength, I don't care so much. Then I like to focus, like personally, that is probably different for everybody. But if you do WODs and need to like push against the clock, it's definitely nicer to do with somebody, you know, like someone is next to you suffering with you. It just feels so much better.
Yeah. No, that's very true. That is very true. I mean, to be honest with you, I had a WOD yesterday where it was like 100 cal on the bike. And I was just like, this.
I saw that one. You posted that one up. I saw that. I was actually going to try that the other day because I'm horrible at bikes. I thought that could be a good challenge to do.
Hey, I hate the bike so much that I bought one. Like that was when, you know, I figured I want to buy a piece of equipment. The first thing I bought was the bike a year ago. And I brought it home. My wife was like, it was about 8-9 months ago. My wife was like, what is this? Why is it in my living room? And I was like,
well, you know, that's the way to do it though. Like if you know that this is something I'm bad at, that's where you need to put your effort in, because that's going to give the greatest rewards later.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it brought up my conditioning big time. But yesterday, I mean, in general, just doing 100 cal and then going into, you know, 50 kettlebell swings, it was just so mentally challenging to get. When you get to 30, it's like, I only have 70 more to go. And it's like, shit, I only have 70 more to go. That's a lot, you know? So. Yeah. And then the hardest part was when I got to 70, it was like, I got 30 more to go. Oh my God, my legs are cramping up. All right, let me put my legs up. No, my legs got to keep going. And it's just, it was horrible. And now I understood what, you know, my coach has been telling me. He's like, the mental part is the hardest part. So, you know, doing 10 sets of 500 meter rows with 60 seconds break is really tough, just mentally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anything like that, because you know, you're going to be on the rower for a while and you still need to push. It's not 500 meters, you know, you sit and chat and have a coffee at the same time. It's still a like fairly decent pace you're keeping. And I think it's a good and a bad thing when you train by yourself, because you really need to get good at the mental game, not talking yourself out of things, not slowing down because it feels hard. When you transition from one exercise to the other, that you don't take, you know, I'm not going to chalk up. I'm not going to stand and huff and puff for a little bit. I'm just going to pick it up and get started and not Because sometimes even when, you know, when you, I don't know, when you, have you videoed your workouts for qualifiers and stuff, I assume.
Yeah. No, I did.
And you look back sometimes and you feel like I only rested for a few seconds. And then, you know, 30 seconds later in the video, you start and just, oh my God, what was I doing? I felt like I wasn't resting at all, but it takes forever.
That's so true. And I mean, that's the hard part. You know, I think that's the most challenging part about CrossFit is when you do have those transitions, like not taking too much time and having that mental ability to kind of move it a little bit faster. And I mean, it's one of the toughest sports that I played, mentally. I mean, baseball, I played that my whole life, but this from the mental perspective is so much more difficult. And, you know, I'm assuming for you, it's changed over the years. And one of the best pieces of advice I got from a sports psychologist, Adam DeHardy, he was on the show not too long ago. He said, the best advice I can offer a CrossFitter is train your 80% to be better so that your 80% is really good versus your 100%. Because if you go at 100% all the time, you're going to break down faster. Whereas if you go at 80% and you train that to be really good, your 100% is going to be that much better. If that makes any sense, what do you think of that?
No, I like that advice, actually. Because it's like he said, it's you can't go all out all the time. It's like certain things you do in your training when you might go 100%. But for example, your bike workout, if you start out at 100%, you're not going to get anything out of that workout because you would be dead. If you discuss the 80%, even for me now when I train, because I feel as I got older, I always keep saying after 32, it kind of went downhill. Like I just feel like I can't, especially together with work and everything. It's like having the same kind of volume and intensity that I used to have when I started out CrossFit. I just can't keep it anymore in the same way. I can't recover enough. So when that happens, I just needed to train smarter instead. Then that kind of 80% rule is very good because you just try to learn to, like what your pace is through your workout, like you said, your 80% pace, you try to make it a little bit faster, but it's not a pace that burned me out. And you try to learn to become more efficient in your movements, try to use, like relax your body more, try to just be better at the movements to make your 80% better.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
No, that totally makes sense. Miko said pretty much the same exact thing. I mean, he was on the show like 6 or 7 months ago and he said the exact same thing, almost to a T, to be honest with you. And, you know, he was just like, you know, some days I have to train at a lesser volume and just manage that part. And it makes total sense. Now, you know, let's get out of the CrossFit talk a little bit. Go into the coaching side. Now, you gave me one tip and, you know, I said that at the beginning of the show and it paid dividends for me because never in my life at this stage would I have thought I would finish third in a workout, especially let alone the first workout. You know, going into it, I was like, all right, I'm going to have fun. And, you know, I didn't even want to know what my score was. And I, you know, someone was like, congratulations, you're third. And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, like, and, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It was like, I was like, do I deserve this? Did I even, you know, should I have been, you know, so it was weird, but it was that.
That must have set you up a little bit different. How did it feel to do the rest of the competition after that?
I almost cried when, you know, the second workout came in, which was the muscle ups, where it was do, I think, 9 muscle ups, drop down, do a sled pull, do another, whatever, 12 muscle ups.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had just gotten my first ring muscle ups like 2 weeks or 3 weeks before that. So I was still doing singles at the time. So I was like, oh, shit, this is horrible. And, you know, that workout, I came in like, I don't know, 15th or 16th. And so that dropped me in the standings to like 7th. I was like, okay, I'm still in the top 10. I'm happy. And then the workout after that, a rookie mistake. I didn't know to adjust the GHD machine or the GHD sit-up thing. So I never adjusted it. So I'm on this thing and my shorts are falling off because I'm going, you know, every time I go back and up, it's pulling on my pants. And I'm like, all right, I kept having to get off, you know, pull my pants up, tie the string, and it wasn't working. And it was just like, it was just a disaster.
So man.
Yeah, I finished like 23rd out of 24th. So that one sucked. But in the snatch, I did better. So it was good. It was a very good experience. But again, going back to you and the coaching, you gave me that one piece of advice, and that was just through a quick chat. And now that paid dividends for me. what type of a coach are you, and how do you give directives towards the people that you train? And you said, you know, you did a lot with physiotherapy before. So do you do a lot with older clients, younger clients, a mix of both?
Yeah, it's I have a little bit of a mixture. Like, I don't have that many, like, very young. They are maybe around their, like, late 20s and then up to maybe late 50s and in their 60s. So it depends. Oh, yeah, a lot, actually, because I have some that have rehab goals. They have aches and pains, for example. You have some that just want to be a little bit fitter, be a little bit stronger, like, do some weight. And then you have some that you say want help with more higher end training. Just maybe, like you were talking to me about, like, strategy and those kind of things. So it's really the whole part of the spectrum, from rehab up till, like, athletic level.
And now, how do you manage pain? I mean, let's go to the athletes that have pain, because I've always told, like, some of the younger trainers, which that never listen to me anyways, because I think trainers have the biggest egos in the world. No offense. A lot of them do. You know, and I'm like, look, the best trainers are the ones that know how to manage client pain. Because I think a lot of people have aches and pains, especially older people, whether it's lower back, whether it's knee pain, shoulder pain. And the best trainers, if they know how to do that, you know, they're gold, because then people are paying you basically for rehab and, you know, to get them to move better. And so how's your approach with that?
No, you're absolutely right. From my personal opinion, at least, I never want anybody to train through pain. If you have pain somewhere, yeah, sometimes we can have a little bit of discomfort because we did something the day before or 3 days before that we know it's very mild and it might go away if we just rest a little bit, like do a couple of lighter sessions and maybe a rest day, and then it will go away. But if you have pain somewhere, if you force someone to keep training in that pain, if you have knee pain, for example, and you still keep doing wall balls, you keep doing cleans, you keep doing, like, all these things, and it's a pain that's a 5 out of 10, for example, it's not going to get any better. You're probably only going to make things worse. So for me personally, I always want someone to, you need to do, like, a combination. You still want to train someone hard, especially if it's an athlete. You still want to be able to lift heavy. You still want to be able to progress them in other areas. But at the same time, you need to take pressure off the painful area, if it's the back or if it's the knee or if it's an ankle or if it's a shoulder, whatever it might be, and rehab that part, and then just try to strengthen the other parts as much as you can in the meantime.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's an awesome answer. And I hope some of the young kids actually listen to that, because that's some good advice versus some.
Because even for me, like, as an athlete, you know, like, when, like, I trained plenty of times, like I said, I even got injured right before our regionals. Like, I did a squat snatch and I pulled my back and I couldn't stand up. Done running sprints and I've torn my hamstring. Like, I've done a lot of weird shit when I've been training. Because you always try to push to the limit, right? When you want to compete. So you keep, like, edging on that limit. And if you're not careful, one day something will pop.
No, that's very true.
And at those points, for example, when I had pulled my lower back, I still want to train. So I cannot train for and just sit for 2 months. I need to do something. And also, what the issue for many people are, that they always think that if I have an injury, I should not move, which it's very important to still move around a painful area. First of all, you don't want to get too weak, because weakness can also give you pain later on. And also, moving, it increases blood flow to the area. You can flush out, like, all the stagnant blood and everything and that's in there, and just slowly help the area to heal. So there's a lot of aspects to that also that you want to try to do. When I had my back injury, I did, for example, pull-ups was absolutely fine. So I tried to become a beast at pull-ups. I can do, like, any kind of gymnastic movement. I can do squats without putting a barbell on my back. I hold kettlebells and dumbbells because I don't have the load on the spine by putting a barbell on it. You know, anything I could to still train my body as hard as I could, but without any pain.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing that people miss. You know, like, you can still get a lot out of your training and don't feel like you're missing out, and still take care of yourself.
No, that's very true. I mean, you can't say it any better. I mean, that's when I tore my labrum, I tore both labrums, and both times it was like, all right, you know, work around it and get everything else stronger and come back stronger. And, you know, that's the right mentality to have versus some people that do sit on their couch and just make it worse over time. What about when you get like a younger, let's say middle of the road client, you know, that's like, all right, I just want to tone up. I want to get fitter. I want this. How do you steer them into changing the mentality of, you know, having a more health and wellness approach to things?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. It's the thing is, when you're a trainer, you need to, like anything with a personal training client, I feel you need to, it's a process of building trust. They need to feel that they can actually trust your advice. And it takes a little bit of time to, I guess some people will believe anything, but so it's a trust process that you, and then you just slowly have to, as they bring things up, you know, I want to lose weight. So let's train 5 days a week. And then you need to bring up things, for example, like it's with nutrition and you need to sleep and you, like what it means to be healthy, because health is definitely a lot more than just training. So just trying to go through those concepts and making them see things from a different way than just being focused on plainly the exercise, for example.
No, I mean, that makes a big difference. And I like how you said that you have to build up that trust aspect. And I think trust is the most important, and one of the key terms. And it's very important to build up that base of trust at the beginning and towards the end, because I think your trainer is someone that, you know, they're like your doctor, like your general practitioner. You know, they're essentially taking care of your life. You know, and I said this to a trainer the other day. I was like, you guys save lives. That's what you're in the business of doing. Because right now, obesity is an epidemic. You know, granted, we're going through a pandemic right now, which is crazy. But obesity in general. Seriously. And then you have diabetes, you have all this stuff. So what you guys are doing, you're really helping the community in general by bettering lives.
That's a really good point you're making there with, I don't know if all trainers actually realize how much power you have on your clients. So when you give advice, what you actually do for that person or what you can do for that person. So like for me, like it's very important for a trainer to be well read about different things. You want to always keep learning and developing knowledge within different things, because like you said, they see you more often than they would see a doctor. So you need to give really good and sound advice in a lot of different areas. And also for me, I feel from what I do as a trainer, it's really hard for me to give an advice unless I've tried it out. So things that I give as an advice is things I've almost more or less tried myself if it comes to a different kind of food or a different kinds of a way to train, or like I say, how to rehab yourself or how to take care of your pain or all these things. Like I've gone through a lot of the things, so I know what it feels like. Which I also feel is very important as a trainer. Like when you read about things and when you see things, and you need to try things before you try them to your clients, because then you can explain things out of experience rather than I read in a book that this is really good. Like when you actually gone through the process and tried it yourself, it's from a way different perspective. And also it's way more trustworthy through the client when you actually try to make them do something.
No, that's 100%. I mean, I agree with you 100% on that. And especially because my coach was like, yeah, you know, I broke this, I did that, I tore this. So it's like, all right, this guy, you know, he knows the tricks. You know what I mean? So it's like when he tells me to do something, it's like, okay, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. And, you know, I trust everything he says pretty much blindly because he has proven that. And, you know, I see the way he moves. You know, he's a pretty high performing athlete at that too. So, you know, I try to get my advice from the best. Now, you brought up a really good point when it comes to trainers and when they preach to their clients. And from my experience over the years, I've seen two types of trainer. You have the boot camp trainer, and then you have the trainer that acts like they know everything and anything, and they're throwing out the latest piece of information that may not have even been researched yet. What's your opinion on those two types of trainers? Like, what advice would you give them?
If I would give any just general advice to any trainer, like for me, it is like you, when it comes to, for example, lifestyle advice, if you give your clients nutritional advice or, you know, you should sleep on time, you should, or whatever, you know, it might be, you need to have the same habits. Like if you suggest to clients, yeah, you know, you should have some kind of mindful mindfulness practice during the day. You should meditate and you should do this, but you have never meditated in your life, or you know, attended 3 yoga classes in your life. That's not the point. Or, you know, like if you want your clients, you know, it's really important for you if you want to be healthier and you're going to like lose the weight and reduce the cortisol levels a little bit, that you try to sleep on time. And this is the preferred time I want you to sleep, but you stay up till 4 a.m. in the morning. It's like all these double standards, you know, like what goes for your clients doesn't go for you.
Yeah, you sort of got to practice what you preach.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to. Otherwise, it's one man, he's called Paul Check. So he says, you become a talking head. He says, you have the knowledge, but you don't practice anything. You just recite whatever you read in a book, for example, which is not a genuine way to coach somebody. Because if you're not going to do it, then why should your client do it?
Yeah, 100%. I'm glad you're a fan of Paul Check. I never struck you a CrossFitter as a fan of Paul Check.
Oh, he's my man. He was the one who he got me started on everything.
Oh, it's amazing.
It was way back when in 2009.
Oh, it's amazing. He is definitely a wealth of knowledge. I mean, that guy is amazing. He has so many good programs. He preaches like great knowledge. It's funny because, you know, through the research that I've done with him, and when I, you know, I showed him to my wife had a completely different perspective. She was like, he almost like has a cult following. He's like a cult leader. And I was like, no. I was like, Paul Check? No way. The guy preaches love. She was like going through the steps of having a cult, or like the characteristics. And I was like, all right, maybe. Okay. But I mean, that doesn't degrade the fact that the guy knows a lot about the human body.
I know what she means, to be honest. Like, he is incredibly knowledgeable, and I love like reading his material and listen to him. He has a lot of depth in a lot of different areas. Like sometimes he weighs off a little bit, but it's the thing is, like she actually said with the cult, because it's not his fault that people take it as a cult. Because some people, you know, when they get, it was the same people, like they get into Polykin or they got into Paul Check, or like when they find something that they like, they get so fixated on it, and this is the way, and this is the only way, and this guy is the one who, or this woman is the only one who has the right idea of how to do things, and everything becomes very black and white, and it does become very cultish. You know, unless you do this, you're wrong.
Yeah, no, totally.
It became very much like that. So, and I, to be honest, when I first started out with him, like I got so much into his material, so I started feeling a little bit like that. You know, I almost got guilty if I didn't eat the way that he suggested, or, you know, whatever it was, became too much. But because I've been a coach now for, what is it, like 16 years, like you just learn that there's so many knowledgeable people out there, and they all have a bit of the truth, and you just need to learn from as many like masters in their trade as you can, and just have like put it in your toolbox, and whenever you encounter a client that might benefit from this particular thing, you use it. You know, whether it were like, even you 10 years ago, you thought it was wrong, but if it's going to work, use it. Go on.
100%. And I think that's awesome that you're such a, you know, a well-rounded coach. I mean, just from the conversation, you're a very well-rounded trainer, coach, and people would be stupid not to like try and reach out to you, to be honest with you. Now, let's go into coaching a little bit. Do you have any athletes that you coach also, like CrossFit athletes or athletes in, you know, any other areas?
At the moment, actually, I don't. I usually have a little bit on and off. Otherwise, it's just mostly like my friends, you know, when you train with them and when you meet up with them, if I'm in London or if I'm in Sweden, you know, you train a little bit like that together. But I don't really coach anybody in that way at the moment.
Is that something that you're going to get into in the future? That's part of Haya's question. I'll read Haya's question now. What are your current goals as a trainer and also as an athlete? What are your current goals right now as a coach and as an athlete? Do you have ambitions to become a coach? I mean, is that something that you'd be into coaching young CrossFit athletes?
Yes, for sure. It's a very interesting part. Like, I like the athletic parts of training. Like, I do really like the rehab part. It has a specific place in my heart. But like, athletes is very fun to train because they're very motivated individuals. Like, for me, it's always, if I work with someone who's motivated, even if it's someone who just wants to, you know, get out of pain, or if they just want to be a little bit fitter, when encounter someone who really just wants to work hard and do the best they can. It's so rewarding. So I really, that's what I love with PT, is because you really get to spend that time with each person. But I have coached classes and I've coached people before. I used to coach back in Sweden. I was a strength and conditioning coach for a football team. So it's also very rewarding to see those, to train the more higher end athletic abilities and see that as well. It's really fun. But at the moment, so, you know, like I'm a little bit airy-fairy that way. Like I just keep learning and looking into different things. And then, you know, people just reach out to me and then whatever their issues are, I try to do the best to solve them.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Now, what about as an athlete? What are your ambitions right now as an athlete, seeing how they kind of screwed up the entire masters category, you know, where it's now like, what is it, only 10 make it in? So what's going on as an athlete right now for you?
As an athlete, I said at least for this year, I'm taking a break from competitions and such, you know, like I've just been competing for a lot of years. So it's, I like just training because I love training. I want to go into the gym and feel that love for the sport and to just train my body again, because it can become really stressful when you compete. You just, you know, feel the pressure and you see everybody do personal bests on Instagram and you see people's times in WODs and you want to keep up with the Joneses in everything. So it's so this year I just had khalas. I'm gonna just enjoy. I'm going to train. I still push hard and I want to make myself better and stronger, but just without the pressure or interruption of qualifiers and competitions and things like that. Oh, wow. I guess it's probably a good time now because no one can travel to any competitions anyway for a while. So, you know, maybe it was a good decision. I felt the corona come.
That's actually so true. So, I mean, if Battle of the East does take place this year, we're not going to see you there competing?
You know, like I would say no now, but you know, when the time approaches, who knows? It's the competitiveness is still in me, you know. It's very hard to suppress it because it's, I always said to my husband, you know, like, because, you know, like, do you want to compete? Oh yeah, just one more year, you know. Just one more year. You just, you keep pushing it. It's just, it's so hard to let go from it when you've done it for so long. And also, I love I love actually Battle of the East specifically because it's here. So you see so many people that you recognize, you trained with. It's just, you know, it's like a big reunion of everybody. So it's even that one and Flair, like the local ones, are always so fun to attend.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. I mean, once an athlete, always an athlete. I stopped playing baseball and switched to CrossFit just because I still love competing. I got bored with bodybuilding. It was too boring for me to go to the gym and just, you know, go through the push-pull routine, or I was in strongman, but unfortunately I wasn't strong enough. so I threw in the towel. I mean, honestly, I love tire flips and, you know, log presses and everything. Like, that's my jam right there, but I'm just not strong enough.
Those are really fun movements to do, actually, even when if they introduce something like, you know, they have like the worm and not the worm, sorry, the pig and the tire flip and that stuff. And they started introducing in CrossFit, like they're fun movements to do, all these, like the farmer's carries and these, like the stones. They started introducing it. It's really fun.
Oh, the stones are awesome. First time I tried the stones was in a strongman class, and I picked up on it right away because I'd watched so much strongman as a kid growing up. And it's just, the movements in strongman compared to any other like lifting sport are so practical for everyday life, in my opinion. You're, whether it's a stone carry, a sandbag, or a log press, or a pull, or pushing the sled, or any of that, like it's just so practical, you know, compared to.
I've got to admit that I've only quit one workout in my whole life. And it was one with strongman movements. I remember it. It was like probably 4 years ago or something. I can't remember it because I can't remember exact movements, but you know, it was a lot of like say heavy bag carries. You compress your chest, and it was like heavy kettlebell swings, and it was something as well, these heavy lactic acid movements. I remember like I had to do 6 rounds, and after 4, I just like, I can't, I'm throwing up.
Yeah, no, it's tough.
And that's when it was like, I felt like such a failure. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like it's, because it was new movements. My body didn't know what to do with it. It's just, it completely shut down on me. It was crazy.
Yeah, no, that's understandable though. I mean, because it builds up lactic acid real fast. And I told my coach, I was like, dude, can you please like put in some strongman stuff into my wads? And he was like, I'm not going to do that. He was like, you're already good at half this shit. You know, there's no point. There's no point in putting in there something that you're already good at. And I was like, yeah, that's actually a good point. We got to do what I love to hate, you know? So.
Yeah, it totally is. Like sometimes if I do that on the days, I don't know if people realize, but even as like trainers and athletes, we have days when we wake up and it's Molly Hill. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to train. I feel tired. You're just not in the mood to do anything. When I have those days, that's when I do stuff like that. I do things that I really like, and I know I don't mind doing it at all. So that's when, like those days, that's when you need to do strongman stuff. Just go in and just have fun with it and then walk out like a champ.
Yeah, no, that's probably why I had so much fun last week, because, you know, as soon as this whole thing happened, we didn't have equipment. And I rushed and emptied out all my backpacks, filled them up with sand. And I told my wife, I was like, all right, we got weights, you know, and you know, I was sitting there. She's like, what? I was like, look, you know, this little backpack, we can do kettlebell swings with it. You know, the big backpack, we could use it for, you know, squats. We could use it for over the shoulder. I mean, for me, I could do all that. Not for her. She has a broken arm. But, you know, I had fun with it last week. I had a shit ton of fun. And then, you know.
Actually, I remember you posted up that. I thought you were swinging about your backpack in all different directions.
Oh, yeah. I was having an absolute blast with it. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to just pick something up and just throw it over my shoulder. It's more fun for me than snatch. And then when I got my barbell, my coach didn't program it in for a couple of days later, but I started snatching because I hated it, but I missed the barbell. So it was a bit of a catch-22. How's the current situation for you and your training going?
So yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. When we moved to a current apartment, I set up one of the spare rooms to have like a little mini gym. So I have a nice little setup. I have my squat stand. I have my barbell, my weights, kettlebells. I have dumbbells. I have my pull-up bar. I can't do ring muscle up. So like rope climbs or anything like that is too low of ceiling, obviously. Even wall balls would be too low of the ceiling. No, I have a really nice setup, actually. So I cannot complain.
Oh, that's awesome.
Compared to many that, you know, like they need to empty backpacks and fill them with stuff and throw them around.
Hey,
Even though I should probably do that too, to be honest. I might do that tomorrow just for the heck of it, just to do something a little bit awkward and different.
And look, I'm not putting out an ad for this, but the Rocks duffel bag, that thing has been a lifesaver. I got it up to 40 kilos dry. If you wet up the sand, obviously it's going to weigh a little bit more. And I would not recommend that because it weighs a lot more when you think, you know, you think, okay, I'll put a half a bucket of water in. That's a lot of weight. You know, it carries a lot more weight. But it was funny because we had the assault bike coming into this. So I looked at my wife and I go, see? The assault bike came in handy. She looks at me. She goes, you know what? I don't hate you anymore for buying that damn thing. So.
Yeah, it's a devil's machine, that one. I swear, I'll never be a friend with an assault bike, I think, ever. Anything else, the ski or anything, like the assault bike is not my friend. I need to gain like 20 kilos so I sit more steady on the saddle or something, or something needs to happen.
It is one tough piece of machinery though. But I mean, it's tough. You know, these times obviously are tough, but you know, it's good to see you again through. What advice would you give to the average person? I mean, because I saw some jerk get on Instagram the other day and say, oh, I hate to break it to you guys, you're going to lose this much muscle and you're going to lose that just from doing bodyweight exercises. And in my mind, I'm saying, no, you're not. In fact, if all you've been doing is lifting weights, you might gain more from the body weights for doing that for a 6 or 7 week period, you know, just because of the muscle adaptation. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, you can still gain a lot with, like you said, with, I can't remember who it was that I read it like a long, long time ago, but it's basically, if you want to gain strength, it's all about muscle contraction, right? So you can get close to maximal muscle contraction. That's why, like, that's why the bodybuilders, when they do any kind of machine, you always want to focus on the muscle. You want to try to squeeze the muscle as hard as you can against the resistance. Like, it's very intentional if you do bodybuilding properly or like with a purpose. And that goes for even lighter weights, like body weight exercises or whatever you can do. If you can like voluntarily squeeze your muscle as hard as you can, like you will even make yourself sore, because it's that's what the weights help with. When we have resistance with weights, it just helps the brain to fire more muscle fibers. So we grow them and we activate more muscle fibers. So it's just, you can voluntarily try to do that as much as you can, for example. But then also, like, it's plenty of body weight exercises, or you can do single leg, for example, when you do, instead of doing an air squat, if you start doing lunges or Bulgarian split squats, you already double the weight on your leg. And you can get pretty damn, you can keep a good amount of strength just on that.
Or a squat and a quarter, you know, like a 1 1/4 squat or a 1 2/4 squat. That I've seen people gain mass, not gain mass, but, you know, just the strength aspect of it. I mean, granted, you're not going to improve. If you're a power lifter, you're not going to improve your deadlift by 10 kilos. Like, let's be realistic. But
yeah, yeah.
But again,
yeah, that would be amazing. I'm doing some quarter squats on that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, you're not going to lose that much. You know, you really won't. And in an ideal situation, if you focus on the things that you suck at, you might even be better going back.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things when you sent me some questions before, that's such a good point. When, like you say, if you have a limited amount like that you can train or limited equipment, really find the weak spots. And even if it's mobility, if your mobility sucks, spend a lot of time now when you sit inside and work on your mobility, because that's going to help you once you start getting back into training. It's so many things you can like work on with that kind of aspect as well.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. Anyways, look, I've taken up enough of your time, you know, and I really appreciate this. This has been one hell of a talk, honestly, and just hearing about your CrossFit journey. I mean, that's, you know, kind of lit a fire for me a little bit, and I hope it did for the listeners also. And just hearing about your coaching, it would be awesome, hopefully, when this is all over, to sit down and actually have a face-to-face interview, you know, so.
Yeah, no, yeah, I hope so. It's, yeah, it would be nice. It's so weird to have the, even though I'm like the introvert, we discussed this, like, so, you know, quarantine for me is easy peasy. I'm a homebody anyways, but like you say, having an interview, it's so much nicer face-to-face and we can actually chat it out properly.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. And we'll do that as soon as all this craziness is over, hopefully.
Yeah, my God. Hopefully it doesn't take too long. We'll see. We'll tough it out, whatever it takes.
Definitely.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. You can also find us on Instagram @ The Project Kuwait. Thank you, and join us next time.